Captain's Log Supplemental. We are 3 days into the tangent zone. My away team has just returned from a cursory exploration of Abrams 2 in the Abrams system? What's the system? What sector?
What battle?
What sector, Victor?
Mr. McCauley.
Aye.
Shit. Belay that captain's log. Ensign. As you were, mister. Mr. McCauley, your report?
Aye. You mean, let's do the podcast.
Ensign Hergert?
Ha.
Present? Present?
You're an ensign.
Wow. Okay.
And Dr. Jonak? I presume.
Security officer?
I thought I might be security officer.
DJ.
Everyone wants to be that, so it makes sense.
Including Tasha Yar.
Well, now we're just podcasting.
As promised, the internet lit up all week with...
Two votes, right? How many?
Comments. There were comments made requesting our supplemental podcast.
No one posted against
it. We'd love to hear it. That's right. So the eyes have it.
Yep.
Listeners, here's something. You influenced the daily goings-on of four people by just posting one thing on the internet. Look at the power you have. It's amazing.
The four of us are just puppets dancing on the ends of your strings. And the three of you danced your way to the local cinema Friday.
Aye.
We have not talked about Star Trek Into Darkness yet.
We saved it for the podcast.
Everybody like it, right?
Yeah.
I think I effectively conveyed my enthusiasm for it last week.
You did.
But I had some moments of doubt since then. I hate to feel like I'm sort of wishy-washy enough to have been influenced by sort of a negative review that I read, but it got me thinking about the parts of the movie I didn't like, and I think some things about it are going to bug me upon rewatches, but I think it's a solid enough fun ride.
I think it's good, not great.
It's solid. I liked it. I don't think it was as good as the first one. You know, it draws an automatic comparison. There's no way around it. But it was good.
Yeah, it was good. But I really feel like they were more concerned with being crowd-pleasing. Well, and which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But I almost feel like the screenwriters only really ever liked Star Trek II Wrath of Khan. And they weren't particularly interested in drawing any other elements in from any other source material. I was talking to Denver about it earlier today. He's like, well, they had a trouble.
Yeah, they did.
Chuck, have you seen Wrath of Khan? It's fucking awesome.
Well, I know, but you can't duplicate awesome.
Well, they sure tried to duplicate some things.
They did.
Tell that to Hollywood.
But they shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I was with it up to a point, and then they lost me. But we'll get there a little later. I don't know. Do we want to kind of... I don't know if we want to rehash the whole story necessarily, but let's just... Craig, why don't you...
You know, it's pre-movie, but we see that Kirk got commission of the Enterprise at some point after the last movie, but before this one, and that's awesome. Kirk at the helm of the Enterprise where he belongs, you know, what we're...
Well,
expecting.
Presumably he retained the captainhood of the Enterprise
that's
from
right.
The end of the last movie up till now.
Right. That's what I meant.
But it's interesting, at the very end of this movie, they're like, hey, we got the assignment to go on the 5-year mission. Mm-hmm. So,
I
was wondering what they were doing between the first movie and this if they weren't on their exploration mission.
Yeah, they saved the to boldly go or no man has gone before speech, but it seems like that's what they were doing when we joined them, was kind of prancing around in uncharted space.
Alternate timeline. I mean, who knows what could happen?
Well, we joined them like mid-exploration mission.
Yeah, running through some red trees.
Well, maybe that was natives. Just like a test mission. Like, why don't you go explore this Class M world and
see if you can...
If you don't screw it up,
be sure not to violate the Prime Directive, whatever you do. That's the only thing you really need to not screw up.
Don't make these people worship you.
Don't.
You don't, don't need to change anything. Just research.
Yep. Just get in there and get out.
Run some long range scans.
Yeah. Nothing personal.
Yeah. Don't even get out of the ship.
And definitely don't integrate with the people. Put on, put on costumes. Get in there. Save the planet from pure, from total destruction. Don't do that. Oh, you did it.
Broke all the rules.
Maybe I'll back up even from that point. If we...
You yelled at me for backing up about it earlier.
I did. Well, that was pre-podcast. Well, now that we're into it.
This is a pre-movie.
You were backing your ass up earlier. Is that what we're talking about? No.
Chuck was yelling at him about that.
Let's give a little background in terms of the first movie and its strengths and go from there. I mean, like, the first one, I think J.J. Abrams and crew knocked it out of the park, so to speak, in terms of casting and relaunching, rechristening the franchise.
Don't say rebooting.
That's not till Data joins the crew.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I have got really no complaints about the first one, although I do have one major complaint about the first one. I have none except for
this one major complaint.
Here's what bugged me about the first one. There wasn't enough background to justify the depth of Nero's vengeance. You know, he just shows up and he's filled with vengeance, and in particular against Spock. And you, apart from like a throwaway line, you don't really ever, as an audience,
you don't know why.
You don't. He doesn't earn that. Don't you?
He doesn't go into detail about the destruction of his.
No, I mean just the film doesn't go. Well, you think that's enough just to say my planet blew up and that's why I have. That's why I hate Spock forever.
Didn't he explain the whole circumstances of his planet and his wife and the whole thing sufficiently?
Do you think so?
I mean, you know, my memory ain't the best, but
you didn't ever come away thinking that's weird. I mean, that this villain just kind of came out of a wormhole and that was enough to just go after him.
I guess I didn't feel his pain, you know. Maybe they could have concentrated on that a little more if they want you to be. But they don't want to generate sympathy for the character.
Well, maybe it's just me. I mean, but before I saw the movie, I had read the 4-issue comic prequel, which was awesome, and I was so glad that I had read it because it was essentially the backstory of the events that occurred in the original Star Trek timeline, in which Spock and Nero were friends and collaborators, kind of working on this red matter project when they were all of a sudden called to prevent the destruction of Romulus, which failed, at which point Nero blamed Spock for failing to save Romulus, and then it also caused a freak storm that sent them back in time. It was interesting, too, because those events take place with characters from the Next Generation. I think at least Data,
yes,
and possibly also Picard, I think, were featured in that story. So it really kind of tied that in, but that was non-essential to the movie. But I think getting some of that backstory that sort of justified where Nero was coming from and what exactly his relationship was to Spock before the movie began was pretty killer. So
my question is that flavor, or to you it's more essential background? I mean, I know you didn't want everyone to sit down before the movie and be required to read the comic.
No, absolutely not. But I do think that there's material that ended up exclusively in the comic that should have been in the movie so that the comic would have been unessential.
Gotcha.
God, as a TNG guy, I'd say the mention of Picard and Data is pretty essential in the movie.
Give the comic to Phil and he can read it.
I will, once I find it.
So anyway, there's been a comic series then that has been running since that movie came out. A few months ago, I bought the first issue of that, and I was excited to kind of get back into the swing of things, to read some new stories. But I was a little disappointed to find that what they sort of did was adapt the stories of the original series, Star Trek, and just update them in the new timeline with the sort of likenesses of the new characters. Hmm. So it's kind of like the same story unfolds, but occasionally they reference things from the first movie as if that's where they were coming from. But anyway, so that also gives the impression, to bring it back around, that ever since the end of the first movie, they had already embarked on their 5-year mission to explore new worlds and seek out new civilizations.
New life.
That too.
Boldly go places.
To boldly go.
So I read that. Those are out there. And then there's the 4-issue prequel also that leads into this movie, which I made sure to read, remembering how essential I thought the first one was. And this one, not so much. Except there is a story that centers somewhat on a violation of the Prime Directive. So in that sense, it has a thematic parallel to the new movie, but otherwise there's nothing essential story-wise that's divulged in that comic.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking of watching or rewatching the first movie before this, but didn't get around to it.
I wish I would have.
I watch about 2/3 of it the night before we saw it last week. As you may recall, the opening sequence features Nero coming through the lightning time storm in space, and immediately the Federation starship on which... Oh, it's the Kelvin. It's the USS Kelvin, and Kirk's father and mother are both crew members.
Right.
And his mother conveniently is going into labor in that very moment. Has been in labor for presumably hours and hours, yeah. And she's ready to pop right when Nero is ready to blow them out of the space.
There's a lot of convenient coincidences in J.J. Abrams' worlds.
Well, I remember loving that moment, kind of, like the whole getting a glimpse of what Kirk's dad was like and liking him before he sacrifices himself nobly. He has that crack about, don't name him after my dad, Tiberius, that's the worst. And it's moving when he dies and the mother is holding little infant Jim Kirk.
Who was the mother, wasn't it?
Someone recognizable?
Yeah, I thought so.
An actress? I'm not sure.
She's definitely an actress.
But the do you remember who the actor was that played his dad? It was Chris Hemsworth, Marvel's Thor.
Really?
God, I want to say it was like Olivia Wilde as the mother. Something like that.
You want to see her everywhere you look.
Yeah, I want to say everyone's Olivia Wilde.
Can't get enough of that Olivia Wilde.
Who can?
Okay, so...
So, Prime Directive violation. That's where we start
out.
Let's
get right off the... Right going with Rogue Kirk, Conscious Kirk, Conscious... Not Objector, but...
Wait, what?
And I meant conscientious.
We're reinforced right away of Kirk's...
He ain't gonna rough follow
around
the
edges.
Yeah.
Cheating on the Kobayashi Maru.
Kirk's very much...
Personality.
Flying by the seat of his pants, it seems. He doesn't really seem like a good, responsible... Captain.
No. Who would ever put him in charge of anything?
It's because he's got that gleam in his eye. A little twinkle.
It's like, oh, we'll just risk the lives of everybody on the ship just to save one man.
Well, no.
What are you
trying to save? Save an entire, I don't know, village?
Well, to save Spock.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I was going to say, what are you, some kind of logic man?
I'm Spock.
I guess you could have cut the ties at any point.
Spock says the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few when he's in the base of the volcano, doesn't he? When he's basically saying, don't bother saving me.
That like, old.
Says it like 5 times. Don't save me.
Stop saving me.
Kirk's like, nope.
I'm
going to do it.
Nobly sacrificing myself.
The odds of saving me, etc.
Sweet visual treats in the volcano and with the ship busting out of the sea.
Yeah.
The lava shots. Hot lava
that
shots.
It was all great.
There's a pretty good chase scene through the... Where they just jump off that huge cliff. It's like, ooh.
Yeah,
I thought they were going to stop at the edge and then maybe, like, then jump, but they just, boom, we're going.
Well, here's something that maybe is indicative of the strength and flaw of the Abrams movies as a whole, is the shot of the Enterprise rising from the ocean. It's like a total, it's like, wouldn't it be cool if we saw the Enterprise coming out of the ocean? Put it in the movie. But it has there's no logical reason for that to have happened.
God, I don't give a shit.
Okay, well, good. I mean,
it was awesome.
That's where I was when I was watching it. I was just going with it. And I don't know, I mean, I feel like my affection for this world and these characters, I'm not the biggest Trekker or Trekkie in the world. But
Or Trekker.
But I always kind of liked it. I mean, I liked it ever since Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because I think in hindsight, like, the years have proven that Star Trek II Wrath of Khan is one of the world's most perfect movies.
Agreed.
It's just pacing and plot everything.
They should refer to that instead of Tootsie in film school.
Casablanca.
What film school did you go to?
Isn't that what they always say? Tootsie is, like, one of the best movies from a... pacing perspective and a character development perspective and a kind of thing.
That's entirely
possible.
I've
never heard that.
Well, you didn't go to film school. You did, didn't you?
Yeah,
I didn't. Well, never mind that. Tootsie.
Maybe I was just asleep.
Okay, so I was on the right TV show, not Olivia Wilde, Jennifer Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
Who is?
From House.
Never watched it.
Both of those gals were on House. Both hot.
Oh, Olivia Wilde was... Oh, so she was Olivia Wilde by association in your mind.
She was like
She was pre-Olivia Wilde. She was the orig.
Yeah, she was the original Olivia Wilde.
Oh.
On the show.
Not through some weird time-space continuum thing.
It's an alternate timeline. Man, Wrath of Khan. So great. But then, okay, so I had this vague affection for Star Trek with, you know, diminishing returns as the other Star Trek movies rolled out.
As they tried to save whales and blah, blah, blah.
In the 80s, I believed that that was one of the better Star Trek movies. But it has not aged well.
What was it?
As opposed to Wrath of Khan, which is
still fantastic.
Timeless. Yeah.
Every even number movie of the originals. Yeah.
The evens were okay. The odds were not as good, it seemed
like. Oh, yeah. Five especially is a nightmare.
I didn't realize until somehow years after they were all out and we were into the Next Generation movies that I had never seen Five.
You skipped Five?
I don't know how
that's
it happened.
That's a gift.
But then I saw it on TV.
Oh God. Well,
I was like, oh, cool, a Star Trek movie. What is this shit?
Why are they singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat then around the campfire?
And then Jesus. I realized with horror. Well, I realized with Glee I hadn't seen it. Then I realized with horror that it was a terrible movie.
Did you watch the whole thing anyway?
I watched most of it.
You don't know how it ended?
I didn't learn a valuable lesson.
Never let Shatner direct. Do you recall watching the original series episodes with me and under what circumstances we watched them?
How long ago?
20 years.
Jesus.
Roughly, I was thinking about it on my drive over. It started about 20 years ago.
Was one of us sick?
Right around the time when you should have been watching TNG. I'm just saying.
Maybe I was.
I think we had just, all of us, enjoyed a good long stretch of watching TNG in syndication at that point.
I don't remember. Give me a keyword.
You and I were roommates.
Okay. Underwood Street?
In the Blah Buddha House.
Oh, 50th and Leavenworth. Okay.
And one of our roommates was Todd McHenry.
Yep.
Who had recorded, he had made a VHS compilation of all the original series episodes because they used to air after the local news, like 10:30 at night.
On Fox, right?
I don't know.
Was it on Fox?
I think
it
was Fox around.
Before there was even a Fox network. Or maybe Fox was brand new then because The Simpsons existed.
KPTM. Mm-hmm.
But he had recorded them all, so he had, I want to say, 60 to 80 original Star Trek episodes on VHS, like 6 to a tape. And we were all roommates, and we were all in our early 20s and irresponsible. And somebody forgot to pay the cable bill, like, many months in a row, and we had our cable shut off. So Todd was like, well, I'll go get my Star Trek tapes. And we literally, I watched every one of those, like, back-to-back. That's all the television I watched for a good 3-4 months.
That sounds amazing and awesome.
Much like today's...
were there. I don't know if you were probably banging chicks, doing something more productive.
That's a possibility.
Much like today's TV watching, where you take a series and just hit it, like on Netflix or something.
It was very much, it was a precursor to that. Yeah, it's the first time I'd ever really exclusively watched one show.
That's right in a row.
You might have invented it. I'm just saying.
Female listeners, I wouldn't say I banged a lot of chicks.
I didn't say a lot. I said chicks.
Well, I just went somewhere in my mind. So, you know.
You just remembered it was a lot of chicks.
Don't think I'm, you know, used goods or anything, because not the case.
I'm male gigolo.
I would say experienced.
I'm fresh, baby. I'm fresh.
Experienced.
Freshly experienced.
So, I'm guessing now that you didn't watch them as slavishly as I did.
I don't have a very good memory.
You remember the plots of original series episodes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've watched Star Trek.
Well, yeah, those are important. Just kidding.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so you and I, we have a background.
We do.
Of having watched those. Phil, you're a Next Generation guy, right?
Yeah, I've probably seen all the episodes, and there's very little like that I could piece together plot-wise or run through a show in my mind. My memory is not the greatest.
Our 30-year-old friends think that the original series was ridiculous and just...
That it's like laughable and too campy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That it's all about Shatner's overacting,
right.
and
I get
bad special effects and stuff.
I get that watching The Next Generation, but like you, probably there's a place in my heart for it that will never go away.
I want to say that the experience of seeing Star Trek the Motion Picture when I was like 9, and then seeing Wrath of Khan when I was 12, it just set an indelible fondness for those characters that has never eroded. So I, even though I might have found the original Star Trek campy, I still ate it up, you know? I mean, what was it even like watching The Next Generation not having seen the original series? Did you get a sense that you were missing something, or you that some references didn't make sense, or just like Star Trek is cool?
Basically that. I mean, even at that time, it was like 89 or 90, and the shit seemed high tech for that time, you know? And you go back, you know, today's 20-year-olds would say TNG looked campy and stupid, and special effects are terrible, but, you know.
But you were with it.
Right.
You were just in Star Trek. Let's watch Star Trek. That's a good show.
And
without any sense of history or
no frame of reference to older series.
I knew the original episodes existed.
Had you seen any of the movies?
I can't remember when I first saw them.
Cared about them?
I'd probably say I hadn't seen any by the time I was watching TNG.
Did watching TNG make you want to see the movies?
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Mike? What's your Star Trek background?
I've seen Rathacon and these two Star Trek movies.
And
a handful of TNG episodes with Phil, and maybe like one of the original series episodes.
That
Craig made us watch.
Every Star Trek thing we've watched with Mike, he has not made it to the end.
Well, you could have written this movie, Mike. I think basically Robert
Plant
Orsky.
Well, we couldn't remember Admiral Marcus's name earlier, and he's the father of Carol Marcus,
Thanks to Phil for putting two and two together. What's the name of that admiral that's Carol Marcus's father?
So I don't think this movie leans on Star Trek lore that you have to be a Trekkie, really. It's kind of a...
I agree.
One of the reasons overall why I'd say it's good, not great, is it doesn't build that world. It's like...
It reinvents
it. It's all paced very fast, summer blockbustery, you know, but it doesn't take time to sculpt some completely deep magical world, you know. I mean, you're just kind of run through
blam, blam, blam.
The pacing of it.
And yet, I feel like they walked that fine line of doing fan service to the original material while also winning over new fans by not doing, as you say, like...
Not alienating people by only, or just...
Yeah, like, first and foremost, they got the characterization and the casting so right with all the iconic crew members.
Totally.
Plus, but
the new Star Trek world is sexy. It is high-tech.
Everything looks amazing.
It's the Star Trek you would always, like, dreamt of, basically.
Mike, you want to... Can I drink some more whiskey? Jameson. Warm.
Jameson plug? That's more ice. Computer!
Jameson, hot. No. Take that back. I don't want that.
But I think it was brilliant in that basically they created a new Star Trek for a new group of fans, but there was all the details were right for the old fans.
Are you still with us? A piece of ice just fell on the computer. Oh.
Shit.
Worst handoff ever.
Well, we'll see if that shorts out in a minute.
The visual, the art design, everything is amazing. It looks real and lived in. I was thinking about that in the new one when they show the warp core. It looks like you're inside some sort of industrial complex with turbines and.
It's hard to believe that's in a ship, you know. Like
I found that kind of underwhelming a little bit. The whole warp core. Well, at least the room around it where they first walk through is. I expect it to be a little more high tech than, but Kirk's actually in the warp core, it's pretty cool. But otherwise, I was like, just kind of looks like a boiler room or something like that.
Well, I mean, that's a great example of, especially since they mirrored that sequence, like scene for scene, sort of, beat for beat from Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting going back and seeing how different. Those environments. I mean, apart from the existence of a glass door, how different they look.
Yeah, I should have rewatched Wrath of Khan as well.
Here. We didn't know. How about Khan as a character, the casting and all that, his delivery, that voice. Shit, I liked it.
Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch.
No need for name calling.
Who's watched Sherlock?
I have not.
Nobody's raising their hands.
Who's got Netflix?
I will as of. in a couple of hours because it's Arrested Development Day.
So you're ordering it? You're subscribing to it specifically for that?
Yeah.
I recommend the BBC Sherlock.
All right.
With Benedict Cumberbatch
our friend Denver
Sherlock Holmes.
Touted it highly, didn't he?
Said it he was did. Great. Quite. Yeah. I was surprised that he liked it as much as he did.
Quite so.
Mm-hmm. Old B-cum.
So when we were walking out of the movie, Allison asked me, what'd you think of Cumberbatch as Khan instead of, you know, having an English accent instead of a Latin accent? Like Ricardo Montalban. And I said, oh, you know, it's cool. I mean, he made it his own and stuff. And then
I didn't even think about that.
I read something later, and they made note that they both got it wrong because the character of Khan is supposed to be from Southeast Asia to begin with.
Hence the name, Khan.
Right.
Well, they all made it their own.
Right.
He's a less colorful Khan, I think.
Well, that's one thing I really do like about it. The fact that they tied it in to the timeline, that it makes sense. It makes its own sort of time travel sense that everything that's happened in Star Trek, everything that a tried and true dyed-in-the-wool Star Trek fan loves about Star Trek, all those stories really existed, at least in Spock, the original Spock's lifetime. And that even though this is a parallel splinter timeline that has been created by the events of the first movie, all that stuff happened and still is germane and pertinent in the sense that Spock remembers it all.
Because he references it when they have their convo.
Exactly.
Later on.
Spock's like, I know you said never ask you about my future, but have you ever heard of Khan? And I don't know. What did you think of that scene?
I mean, the thing is, Spock is still Spock, so he's calling on his future self, which is not the right thing to do, but he must still know somewhere in there that his future self would end up talking to him about it because it's still him.
It's not the same thing as Doc Brown not wanting to hear about his future from Marty?
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, what do you guys think?
I like that they didn't give more about the conversation, the actual conversation. I think it's cool that he just started in and then they cut away.
So how did you defeat him? And then cutaway. So you know right. that there's...
Yeah. I like that.
And I think maybe, I mean, because old Spock is like, oh man, he's the... That Khan guy is the worst guy ever, pretty much.
He's
so,
the worst.
I mean, if you would ask me maybe about some other dude, maybe I wouldn't have told you, but, you know, Khan, I'm probably going to maybe help you out on this one.
Yeah. Okay, but, I mean, I loved it. It was a fan, like, fist-pumping moment. It's just like, you know, everything that had to do with Khan and their legendary, you know, engagement. History, you know, both from Space Seed in the original series and then again in Wrath of Khan. And that all that history, it means something here. It's not just like retelling and reinventing Khan. It's all pertinent. Do you feel like having seen Wrath of Khan and knowing who Khan is and what has come before is kind of like required viewing to fully appreciate this movie?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If this storyline had come first in real life, when you saw Khan on SETI Alpha 5, not 6, you would have had an even more stirring situation. I mean, part of it was there because of Space Seed in the 60s when they filmed that, and you're like, anyone who was old enough and had seen that originally and saw, oh my God, Khan, like, that's crazy, that's cool. But, I mean, this further fleshes that out. I mean, it's just more. There's more story, there's more background, more emotion, that kind of thing. I waited till the very end. I waited till the house lights came up on this movie because I was sure that after they rolled the credits, they were going to show
tease something.
They were going to show Khan and his crew being left on SETI Alpha 5 when it was still a great Class M planet. I waited. I was positive that it was going to happen.
Like launch the torpedoes on SETI Alpha 5,
or them just like coming out of the Botany Bay, like into, you know, because when that landed, presumably it went well and they were setting up camp and everything was cool.
Dude, I so wish that had happened.
Me too. I wish so much that I waited and
I didn't even think of that, but because I'm dissatisfied with just seeing him back in the cryo freeze at the end. I mean, I like the fact that he's not dead, but
I would have liked to have seen him swearing vengeance, you know.
Didn't they dispatch Khan a little too? I mean, it's nice that Spock pummeled him with his fists into submission, to as sort of a good callback to Kirk pummeling him to no effect.
Yeah. I was a little confused by that.
And that you know that Spock, the power of Spock's rage at that point is potent.
But is that what it was? The power of Spock's rage? That
the power of Spock's rage compels us.
It didn't seem like badass enough to a way to dispatch Khan.
Well, you know, Kirk's never going to have to lean on Spock's muscle ever again now that he has Khan DNA in him. You know, who knows what's going to happen?
Oh fuck!
Yeah, Kirk could become some sort of semi superhuman. I hope he doesn't.
Maybe the villain.
He's a new Avenger.
The villain in the next one is going to be that little girl that got Khan's DNA at the beginning of the movie.
The Tribble.
The real trouble with Tribble.
They're gonna go back to the all camp of the original series.
Oh my god.
I love how Bones is like, I'm intently studying how Khan's regeneration works and he's injecting a Tribble, and then like two weeks later the Tribble comes back to life and we discover all you really need is just Khan's blood.
Yeah.
There's no real scientific...
That's one of those coincidences that's just like, oh.
I forgot. I injected that thing and I just left it sitting there.
Yeah.
It could have killed us all. Yeah.
Okay. That Tribble smells. Can someone move it? It's been dead for... What? It moved. It just moved itself.
So his deep study was just injecting blood and waiting, basically. And when it finally worked, that's when he knew that's what you have to do, is just blood transfusion.
I appreciate the Tribble callback, but I mean the presence of the Tribble, but it was a bit at the gravity of the situation at that point of the movie, it was the wrong time to bring up Tribbles.
You're right.
Some would argue, is there ever a wrong time to bring up Tribbles?
Maybe at a funeral? I don't know. Maybe if you're looking for a joke.
A couple wrong times.
Yeah.
I read something. I was talking about the characterization of Khan and how this is a young Khan, right? It's a Khan who hasn't lived through the 20 years exiled on SETI Alpha 5, like the Khan that we remember from Wrath of Khan. But that the events, like the motivations, the things that Khan does, there's parallels to what he does in this movie to Space Seed. Do you recall the events of Space Seed?
No, I remember him coming onto the ship. I remember him being suave as fuck and charming the pants off of a lot of people. And he, what did he want? He was still hell bent on genetic dominance, right? Or he was still of the mindset of what do you call it when you think that everyone lesser than you should be exterminated, like a genocidal, you know,
genocidal genocide.
Yeah, he still had the genocidal bent, right? Or
I don't know that he was so genocidal. I mean, was he like
Hitler?
Yeah. Hitler. Well, is he just kind of like, if you're not genetically advanced, then you're inferior, and therefore you should be exterminated? Or I think I always thought of it more as, because I'm superior to you, you should be subjugated to me, and I'll prove it with my superior intellect.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Maybe that he didn't try to exterminate humanity; he just wanted to dominate it.
Right. When his son and Khan had advised him to, we have a ship, we have the means to do what we will. You've bested Kirk. You don't need to best him again. Let's just get out of here. Let's get moving.
Jock him. Was that truly his son, or just his fellow?
Oh, maybe
advanced
not his son.
Human?
Yeah, whatever. But he was definitely a father figure, and he's like, oh, but he tasks me. So can't do that into the nebula.
Well, so I guess in Space Seed, you know, they discover the Botany Bay, they thaw him out, they're charmed by him, and he sort of feigns, oh, I'm still fuzzy from the cryosleep, or he's just, he keeps postponing or delaying an explanation of who he is and where he's from. But there's a sexy lady historian on board who takes it upon herself
to hang out
with them.
She goes completely
head over heels for
AWOL,
for Khan.
Yeah, she's yeah.
And he basically gets his new historian girlfriend to help him take over the ship.
That's right.
So I guess this guy was writing that in the new movie, this is kind of before the movie starts. Presumably they find Khan, they thaw him out, he woos them with his charm, and he works from within the special weapons program to assert his dominance over humanity. And then Peter Weller's Admiral Marcus, a.k.a. RoboCop, kind of gets a sense that Khan is bad news. And so then he blackmails Khan to keep helping him or else he'll kill the rest of his crew. It's his crew, right? I mean, he keeps referring to it as his crew.
His crew family, of the Botany Bay.
His family. Yeah. The 72 souls that were the crew of the Botany Bay.
They're all nothing if not loyal.
Including, his wife, but...
Well, his beloved wife.
This is important, but was she his... this is not important. Was she his wife on the Botany Bay, or did she become his wife after they were all stranded on SETI Alpha 5? Who knows? I always got the impression that he married her after they were all stranded together, but I don't really know. Maybe it's probably in the in one of the novels.
That's another thing. There's canon of knowledge that we don't know the Star Trek Extended Universe, whereas with Game of Thrones, you and I have read you've read everything there is to know about it, period, and seen every show by the time we podcast.
Well, there's probably a wiki built of people who've filled in a lot of gaps and created the rest of the universe.
I'm sure.
I know there isn't Star Trek.
There's probably more fan-written content, Star Trek-related, than any other genre.
And if you want to know the details about a saucer separation, you can get them down to the T.
There's blueprints and diagrams and YouTube videos.
We brought up Admiral Marcus. How do you feel about Admiral Carol Marcus being brought on the scene?
I know Kirk feels a certain way.
We know Spock feels a certain way. He was like,
I'm the science officer.
What are you doing here?
Little human jealousy and territorialism coming through there.
He kind of rationalizes like, you really have no reason to be here, right?
Oh, let me tell you something I don't like. That I liked in the first one that I don't like in this one. And they didn't play it up maybe because maybe other people didn't like it. Spock and Uhura.
You're not liking the dynamic?
I mean, okay.
You want Uhura for yourself?
Yeah, that's it.
Got it.
Human territorialism.
She seems like a handful.
She was hardly in this movie, for starters, so my complaint is not all that. Doesn't have that much weight behind it. But the whole campy, I was waiting for Spock to go, Captain, if Mama ain't happy, ain't no one happy. It's just like so
relationships
so counter to his personality that I don't think he would logically sit down and logically decide to have a logical relationship with this fiery, hot-headed, gorgeous woman. Oh wait,
now but she was there for him the moment that his mother died.
Okay,
and that's one of my favorite moments from the first one.
Mother died.
I've been waiting to see Winona Ryder fall off the edge of a cliff ever since Girl Interrupted.
Insert Tim Burton movie here.
So I loved her in the first one, and those kinds of relationships you're talking about, she had a lot more screen time, she had a lot more relevant things to say and do. I like the interaction more. This one, I mean...
she's kind of out of it, and then she shows up at the end
If you're just going to put her in there for a second, you should make it better than what it was, in my opinion.
Her character was a little underserved, and her moments where they gave her stuff to do felt a little shoehorned in. It's kind of like, we can't forget about Uhura.
Right.
Well, let's have her go beam down to Vulcan, too, because she's a translator. She can talk to the Vulcans. But all she does is get herself almost choked out.
I feel like, I mean, when I see a movie like this where something so obvious should have happened that didn't, it makes me wonder if the actor who plays the person didn't have literal other commitments, and they're like, "Oh, we got you for a weekend." I mean, that's the fact that I'm even left thinking that, or thinking that's a possibility.
You feel like Zoe Saldana would have opted out of this one because her role wasn't good enough?
I mean, I don't know if you would ever opt out of a movie this big when you're not a huge star.
No,
but it just
looks good in that outfit too. No.
Okay, for once, it's you being flippin' and sexy, and I'm sitting here going, come on, man, let's stay on point.
What's wrong with being sexy?
So, I wish there would have been more of her, and would have been better.
I agree. Uhura was a little underserved in this one, but and I don't hate it, though. I enjoyed the moment where they were, Kirk, Spock, and Uhura were all running away from the Vulcans together, and, is that the moment I liked? No, it's when they were in the
elevator
turbo lift. together.
Turbo lift.
And Kirk is like, "Are you two fighting?" And then the doors open and Spock is there.
It's a good little comic relief in that. Remember, it had the same texture of DeForest Kelly and Kirk and James Bill Shatner when they were in the turbo lift before. Remember when Bones said
in Wrath of Khan?
In Wrath of Khan, when he's like, "Salt on all wounds," and she changed her hair. I hadn't noticed. Kirstie Alley, remember?
The
same turbo lift, type.
Wrath of Khan is the template.
A callback.
The template that these guys are building.
Well, but
upon.
A lot of these are homage and callbacks. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it.
Oh, speaking of good homage and callback, Carol Marcus saying to her father, "I'm ashamed to be your daughter." I read this and I didn't pick up on it at all. In the new movie, or in Wrath of Khan, David Marcus says to Kirk, "I'm proud to be your son."
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That one's a fun one to go back and appreciate when you rewatch it.
You know that in making this movie, since it was about Khan, you know how many people fucking poured over the Wrath of Khan? How many people who already were super familiar with it, were kind of familiar with it, had never heard of it, sat down and watched that movie over and over, or parts of that movie over and over, and I'm sure that some of that's just going to sneak in from that new familiarity in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and J.J. Abrams does that stuff anyway. He likes to call it back and refer to things in real life and in fictionalized stuff. So it makes sense that stuff is in there. I don't hate that at all. It's kind of a super fan reward too, you know?
Super fan achievement.
I read one person sort of comment that J.J. Abrams is technically proficient. Like, he knows how to make great movies, but he doesn't know why to make great movies. Does that resonate with you guys at all, or is that just too film snobby?
Yeah, I don't think Abrams...
I don't know.
Has the abstraction, or...
Well, he's kind of like a blatant Spielberg wannabe.
Yeah.
To a degree, right?
He's really only done big kind of action-y movies. I mean...
Well, Lost.
Yeah. But lots of TV shows. He did Felicity. I never watched Felicity, but I'm pretty sure it's got a different
tone.
I'll tell you this.
I'd like to see him do a movie that's not, you know, Star Trek or
just
something.
Not action?
Big. Yeah, just...
But on that topic, I think...
And maybe he has, and I just haven't seen it, but...
If I had seen these two Star Trek movies, I wouldn't have thought that J.J. Abrams could have been involved in something as non-action-y and cerebral and engaging as Lost. And I know there's a bit of a split camp, and there's some people that haven't seen it. And
I would like to argue on the cerebralness. And
go ahead. I'll argue with you tooth and nail, because...
Did you watch all of Lost?
No.
Well, you don't know what you're talking about then.
Right, that's an easy one, but I don't want to go there. So he can do some engaging things, and he's not a one-trick pony, and he's not just... he panders sometimes, but it's always fun. If he panders to the audience, I think it's you end up usually smiling or laughing because of it.
Well, I feel like he basically tries to seed the story with fan pleasing moments, and then like the story is secondhand to the viewing experience.
Yeah,
a little bit.
There was plenty of darkness in Lost, and I don't think that I felt or saw that darkness in Into the Darkness. This movie, Into Darkness, or. Maybe a little bit more with the last Star Trek movie, but I think he's capable of more than he has showed movies wise. But the movies he's making, he's not supposed to show that. That's not what they're for, you know.
They were really pimping the Into Darkness theme with the like posters, you know, very dark posters, and
not
they never scraped rock.
They
bottom,
lied,
you know?
Yeah, they lied to us definitely.
There wasn't a ton of peril involved, you know. Like,
I guess probably my favorite J.J. Abrams thing is I just checked it. I watched Fringe on Fox for the whole series or whatever, and I thought it was a good series. It didn't really get it to do. Nobody kind of, you know, it eventually got moved to Fridays and just kind of, you know,
shelved.
Went on its own. But I think it was a pretty...
Fringed.
It was a kind of...
Did you watch... Watch all of Fringe, or
yeah, I watched every episode of it.
Is it still? Are there still some episodes to come, or are they done?
Nope, it's done. It finished up like a couple months ago. So
I tried a couple times to get into it, and then I'm gonna start watching it now because it just within the past month, popped up on Netflix.
Yeah, you should.
Is it worth watching?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's, you know, sci-fi-ish.
Because, you know, I'm getting Netflix tonight.
Oh, there you go.
Dude, we should watch Fringe more or less roughly around the same time, and we can geek out about it together.
Because we're about to be done with Game of Thrones.
That's right.
Only two episodes?
But Mike said there's not a following. Do people care about Fringe?
It's got a following.
Yeah, I mean, they kept it around until it, you know, they didn't just cancel it outright. They moved it to Fridays, and then...
Is that with what's his name?
Five seasons?
Yeah, I think so. Five or six.
I'm not sure there was a recognizable what's his name.
What's the one he did?
Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
That's not what I meant, but okay.
Carol Marcus was hot and
is
cute
hot
and interesting.
Oh my god.
She had pathos. She had brains. Mythos. She had looks.
Ethos.
She had an underwear shot.
I didn't notice.
It was in 3D.
But the one thing that she didn't have was any significant interaction with Kirk as a character.
Except for a few glances. Well, telltale glances.
At the very end, she was very smitten with him.
She was?
Oh, yeah. Right. The end? The very last thing?
Tell me what happened.
They're getting married, basically, is what I got from that
glance. He said, when they were saying, I think they were saying goodbye, weren't they? And
I don't think they were saying goodbye. I think they were charting off on the five-year mission. Like,
was she going on the five-year mission?
Yeah, she's there.
Oh!
So this is new, more romance.
She replaced Nurse Chapel.
She effectively replaced Nurse Chapel.
She's like, I'll be your nurse. Because apparently in the alternate timeline, Nurse Catherine Chapel had already had a fling with Kirk that ended badly from her point of view.
Oh, yeah.
And she had herself transferred.
In the original series, didn't they always kind of skirt the issue? They flirted. I mean, she was enamored of Kirk. Enamored.
Did you mean skirt the issue to play on words?
There was a specific episode that played up the fact that Chapel had a crush on Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something in the plot. I can't remember what happened exactly, but there was, you know, whatever alien, omnipowerful alien that was messing with them gave
Q.
her... It was like the proto Q.
I was going to say Jesus, but...
Well, every
come on.
Every third episode of the original series features a Q-like character.
Oh, God, now I need to watch the original series.
You do. Whether they're little kids, whether they're guys trapped behind paintings, whether they're mind control, whether they're flowers that shoot spores in your face, like a 60s revival, and then you just do whatever. Spock gets high, starts playing the flute.
That's what it is with the
loot
whole...
flute.
Let's make Spock get emotional, because that's what people thrive on.
Do you remember what Todd McHenry, who we mentioned earlier, old roommate, would call all those Data episodes where Data got emotional?
Yes.
Do you remember what he called them?
No.
He called them, I think he said this at first, he's like, oh God, he's like, another BSAV, B-S-A-V, and we're like... He said it a couple times, and we're like, what are you talking about? What's a B-Savvy? He's like, oh, a Brent Spiner acting vehicle. Anytime Data got...
He was just waiting for one of us to ask him what it
right.
meant.
Anytime Data got emotions, he would just be like, oh, this.
I think it's a pretty poor acting vehicle, because the emotions were few and far between.
Programmed emotions.
Speaking of Data, what the fuck is up with the android on the bridge of the Enterprise in this movie?
Did
you guys catch that?
I hadn't thought
about it. The bald dude?
Bald guy with a giant data port on the back of his head? What is he, like an early model positronic android or what?
Listen, man, with this alternate timeline, they're going to juice it. They're going to juice it.
They juice the fuck out of
it. They're going to do whatever they want, taking all of Star Trek canon.
You like Star Trek? Look, we got a fucking Data over here. We got everything.
We got the new Carol Marcus, where there's actually... We're going to see some romance. We got Uhura and Spock. We got it all.
We got Klingons. We got fucking Khan. What more do you want from us?
We have RoboCop.
And that's
Come
what
on.
People want. That's what people want. They want all of it.
Clarence Boddicker is going to make an appearance in the next episode, next movie.
I haven't seen any 3D chess yet in the movies.
You kind of saw one.
Oh, he thought you said chest.
That's what he said. What'd you say?
Chess.
3D chess. Never mind.
That's Spock's game.
You were talking about
in the original timeline.
You were talking about Carol Marcus being the new Nurse Chapel. Yeah.
Karen Marcos.
You didn't see that look? That look at the end?
No, I don't remember the look. All I remember is the moment where McCoy and Marcus beam down to the planet to disarm the thing. And I was thinking, that's the most playful banter she had in the whole movie. It was with Bones. Maybe Bones gets to hook up with Marcus in this timeline.
Not after that glance.
Not on Kirk's watch.
Not on Kirk's watch.
Which is always.
Well, let's talk about Kirk.
Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a romantist.
They got it all.
Let's talk about Kirk getting laid a little bit.
Talk a little bit about it.
Fan service of him waking up after a threesome with the chicks with the cat chicks.
Just like last time he was at Academy and he woke up with the two green ladies.
It was one green lady in the first one.
I my mind does what it wants.
But she was hot. It's kinda like there's what do we know about Kirk? He's
brash.
But he always has sex with the alien chicks.
Yep.
Just like the series. Like the two scenes that in these movies, it's always the alien chicks that he's getting it on with.
First interracial kiss on... First two interracial kisses on TV. Both Star Trek.
Oh.
The one with the green lady and then the one with Uhura. Isn't that right?
I don't know if the one with the green lady counts as an interracial.
Come on. Interspecial. Did you know that when they would send that to get printed, the film back then, that it kept coming back from the
color corrected?
It came back color corrected. That she was like super pale green, and they're like, "What the shit? What's wrong with this?"
She looks fucking green.
Yeah, they finally walked it down there and talked to the guy, and he's like, "Well, yeah, this is not right." Which I don't understand how you could not get that, but he would change it. They're like, "No, leave it just the way it is. She's supposed to be green."
Do you remember the original series episode where they came upon the planet where there was racial strife among the two races?
Which one?
Where one of them had the white face on the left and the black face on the right.
That's a tough one.
But then the rest of them had the black face on the right and the white face on the right.
Pretty heavy-handed.
And yeah, I mean, that's... So that would have been a real hot-button issue if they had had those two kiss.
No, because when they face each other, they look the same. Oh my god, I think I just learned a lesson.
Depending on where the camera's at.
They would have had to do a Spider-Man style kiss for the colors to line up. In the scene where Spock and Khan are fist fighting on the roof of the transport ship, rocketing across the...
On top of the train, basically.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, exactly. Yeah. Here we go again.
But it's like, I couldn't separate that moment from Star Wars... Like Attack of the Clones, there's a sequence where they're fighting on top of a ship, rocking across Coruscant.
Well, I've seen that movie once.
I was like, oh my god. I mean, I knew that J.J. Abrams was more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan. And I don't know, it just got me thinking maybe it's fitting that he should be directing the next Star Wars movie, since that's really where he wants to go with it anyway.
Yeah, we'll see. Save it for another podcast.
Yeah, Star Wars is a whole other thing, but we'll podcast about it. When the time comes.
If we get two votes, we'll podcast about it.
Nothing can be good forever. That's just
Michelle,
the way it is.
Keith, you know what to do.
Stay silent.
Let's talk about Scotty.
I have something to say about that. You bitched recently that Scotty was your least favorite reconstructed character for the new Star Trek.
Did I bitch?
You bitched. You said that he...
After the second movie...
Let me qualify that.
Okay.
I think I said that I like Simon Pegg, and I like what he's done with it. I just said that of all the characterizations of the crew, his is the most different from the original.
I thought you said that it was too kind of campy, you said it was too dissimilar from the original character.
He is kind of used a little heavily as comic relief, but that's because Simon Pegg is naturally hilarious.
Right, but that was your gripe is that he wasn't Scotty.
He wasn't Scotty.
So for the first, up until pretty much almost the whole movie, he was a lot more grim. He was a lot more Scotty-esque. He was a lot more by the rule, or not by the rules, but he had a very strong negative opinion about
where things should go. Moral compass about...
Moral compass, yeah. So he was, I mean... He may have been a little bit more like the real Scott.
You're absolutely right. And so, I'm qualifying my earlier statement in hindsight of having seen him be more truly Scotty in this one. But I mean, it's a good blend. It's the new Scotty, but he had his character moments were more Mr. Scott.
I wonder if more people didn't, even though his comic relief was likable, I wonder if more people didn't kind of say, He could be...
I liked his comic relief better.
He's an engineer.
He can run pretty well, I know that.
He should be the second most logical guy on the ship, you know?
I'm going to say something now that I'm not sure is 100% accurate, but you know his little sidekick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The actor who plays the little sidekick?
Don't say it. I think I know what you're going to say.
Is it Warwick Davis?
No.
Oh. Well, he's James Doohan's son.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he's the same actor that played the Sulistan pilot to Lando Calrissian. Because those guys look the same.
Kind of. No, I think it's weird. I think they invented this sidekick character for Scotty to sort of as a weird little tangential homage to James Doohan.
Hmm.
So anyway.
He's got a son that young?
He's not a little boy. He's a little person.
Oh, see, he's a little person. That's what I didn't understand.
Chekhov gets a lot of play.
Yeah.
Chekhov gets a lot of play.
Chekhov was
I thought he was the most. Well, Sulu was the most underserved in this movie.
Yeah, he kind of. Sulu got the captain's chair for a quick bit.
He got the con, and that's about it.
He got the con for 5 minutes, and then that's all we need out of
Sulu. He got the con!
he's got the conch. He can speak now.
It's conch.
Conch me out.
We got to see a lot of Chekhov trying to impress, and.
What did
maybe cutting or falling short a little bit on his knowledge.
Well, yeah, that was his character for this time.
It was just
he doesn't know how to run a Wookler Wessel. Let's go back to your argument about the space opera versus hard sciences in space type movies that you said the other day that you were saying. Oh, you know, space operas with the most important
they don't
thing,
have to make sense.
They don't have to make sense. They don't have to follow physical law or anything else. It just has to please people who watch it.
Well, not, but ideally, it has to look and seem plausible.
I did like the lack of gravity used and wreckage just kind of floating around at all times as the ships were.
I think that's the first.
Were staple mated.
First time we've seen that in any iteration of Star Trek where the gravity failed.
Yeah, that was good, too.
And the first time we've seen that there are, in fact, fakey-looking CGI seatbelts that will crawl across your chest when you think the ship is going to turn upside down.
Yeah, they didn't need to grow into full seatbelts.
That wasn't the best. But yeah, the artificial gravity loss is the ship. I mean, I really got a sense and a feel when the ship was going down. Only then did I feel that the ship was massive, you know? Maybe when it was coming out of the ocean, but to... during that time when they're falling. Because if you're ever walking down a ship passageway, you're running on your own power. It doesn't give you sense. But when they were practically like sliding down the ship, you get a feel for, oh man, this thing is just a beast. It was cool.
I wish they hadn't had Khan's ship just gratuitously crash into and destroy San Francisco. And then a scene later, they have a year later, the memorial service, not for half of San Francisco that was destroyed, but just for the crew members lost on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
I have a beef about that, too. Tractor beams? Come on.
Something. Some sort of planetary defense.
You've got anything. A tractor beam at this point in time. I mean, I guess I don't know for sure. I could consult the Star Trek wiki to find out when the tractor beam was invented, but...
You might be onto something there. And what about having a full-on space battle between two starships within... miles of Earth's atmosphere and not seeing another ship anywhere at any point.
Shit. Yeah, I didn't realize they were that close until the very end of it, I think.
When it's Earth down there.
They noted how many kilometers away from Earth that they were, and I thought that meant we were a faraway distance, but...
Let me bring up a topic that's tricky still, but you saw at the end of the film how there was a call-out or they paid respect to everyone who... Just the 9/11 thing that was...
In the credits.
Right. Was the San Francisco... Was that bit anything to do with that? Because thousands would have died.
Ships flying into...
Yeah, thousands would have died. I mean, if that was truly San Francisco, downtown, whatever.
That was my initial thought, but it turns out that J.J. Abrams is a longtime supporter of sort of a 9/11 related...
Conspiracy.
Fundraising... Charity. Charity. Yeah. That's the word for it. Thank you.
Okay, so
conspiracy charity.
So that was probably just a coincidence then.
I think,
I mean, if he is does have that mindset, then you would think
it seems. I mean, I was like, that seems out of left field and inappropriate.
I mean, tens of thousands of people would have died if San Francisco, even a couple blocks. Well, maybe not tens of thousands. A lot
especially of since it was a throwaway moment in the movie. I mean, if you want it to be like we remember 9/11 and the intensity of 9/11, you think they would have made that moment of destroying half of San Francisco have a little more impact.
And I'm sure that's not what the point was, but I guess, like you said, you know, let's commemorate, it's been a year, let's commemorate all that were lost just on the Enterprise and not, you know, the thousandfold number of people that were lost in the city.
Maybe no one was killed.
Well, if you're not good enough for Starfleet at this point in humanity, then what are you?
We can't end on this note.
Money doesn't exist, so...
Haven't they bred out all the ill elements humans by that time?
You know, I think you make an interesting point that Gene Roddenberry, for all of his vision, was an idiot to think that in the future humanity would have perfected itself to the point where there would be no internal struggles, no strife, no need for currency.
That's why it's always aliens that are trying to screw us up.
When all the best Star Trek stories involve conflict amongst crew members and humans.
Aliens are not the only bad people in the universe.
That reminds me. Allison had one complaint. She's like, I hate it when they would cut away to an alien sitting in a chair, you know, like who would just turn their head and then... I hate it when they would just show an alien in the background in one scene and then you don't see any other aliens anywhere.
Including the android.
But yeah, you see a couple.
You see him
clips.
Walking around on the ship on the bridge.
Not till the end, though.
But it's kind of just like they're paying. They're just sort of we've got aliens on the
ship.
We're diverse. We're cool. But this is really all about humans and Earth. So we talked about it, and I was like, Earth is part of the Federation of Planets, but Starfleet is just a human endeavor that happens to have a handful of alien.
And it's early yet too.
It's early. This early times.
Is she maybe early-ish. Maybe she's mistaking Spock for a full human.
Well, she just thought that the Federation is represented by Starfleet. When clearly it's just Earth is one of many planets of races.
I'm sure that who else is in the United Federation of Planets? Not Klingons, not Romulans.
Vulcans.
The Orion? Vulcans. I'm sure Vulcan Starfleet equivalent has a few humans in it, right? Probably not. Who else?
No. From the way those kids were treating Spock when he was...
I mean, look how we went from original series to TNG to, God forbid I say, Deep Space Nine on the diversity.
All right, everyone. This is Science Officer McCauley.
Captain Schlag, supplemental.
Is that Sean Connery as captain of the SS Darkwings Dorkwords.com?
So crazy it just might work.
Next week, Episode 9, Season 3. Back into the Game of Thrones swing of things for a couple more weeks.
Go back in the game.
I think the last two have pretty much have to be action packed, right? Right?
Please.
We'll see.
Pack my episodes with action.
Live long and prosper.